This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the BristolCon Fringe reading series.
Oh, hello and welcome to another BristolCon Fringe reading. Hope everybody is awake this evening. Some of us were awake until 3 o'clock in the morning watching the 49ers, but fortunately that wasn't either of our readers. Hopefully everything will go according to plan today. Later on we will be having the fabulous Lee Morgan, but our first reader is going to be Desiree Fisher, and you have to be very gentle because this is her first ever public reading. Des, it says in her bio, works for a cult. No, sorry, it says that she works for a well-known cult and entertainment store, which I think lots of you may actually have visited at some time or other. And for the benefit of those of you listening on the podcast, Des is from Germany, so we're delighted again to have somebody from Europe coming to read. Des, would you like to come up here and read for us?
Everyone can hear me? Yeah? Great, I can hear myself too. As Cheryl just said, this is my very first reading, so I do apologize for any mistakes, swear words that I say without intent, or any other things that I shouldn't do. Okay, the first story I'm reading is the longer one of the two, and it's called New Year, New Self. It was the night of Christmas Day when Allison was first woken by the urgent screaming of a baby. She knew there was no baby next door, only an old lady who would sometimes put a telly on full blast as her hearing aid was often malfunctioning. Actually, it wasn't working at all. Meg next to her was still fast asleep. Proof to her that maybe, just maybe, she might have had too much of the Irish cream liquor, but it had been Christmas Day after all, and Meg's family had been filling her glass every time she finally neared its delicious end. The screaming continued. It was sometimes disturbed by fits of sobbing, only to rise back into high-pitched urgency. Mike? Mike, are you awake? I'm now, he replied sleepily. She couldn't see him, but she could feel him turning around towards her. His warmth was making her feel a little better. What's up? Can't you hear it? It sounds like a baby. Maybe next door's Biddy has a family coming over? She was relieved that she wasn't actually making this up. He could hear it too, but she wasn't satisfied with his reply. You know that she spends Christmas at her place in Cornwall. Screaming now turned into a weak wailing. Alison's hair stood up at the back of her neck. Look, I'm sure it's a cat. You know what they are like. Waking up in the middle of the night only to ignore you again after you've acknowledged them. Those bastards. You sure? Yes, and what else could it be? Maybe you should stop reading those paranormal and romance novels. Evidently, they don't just put weird ideas about six-pack werewolves into that written little head of yours. Of course, he was right. Her imagination had always been too vivid. There had to be a story in everything. In every person, in every act, there was a story buried somewhere, something worthy to be told. Or maybe she just stopped thinking like that and grow up. Grow up and think about the bloody huge mortgage they were about to take out on a pretty little townhouse with a scrambled up garden and three tiny floors. At least it was in a better state of decoration than their little suburban two-bed. Maybe this could be her New Year's resolution, stop dreaming and go on living. So she went back to sleep, trying to ignore the screaming and the feeling inflicted in her chest. But the screaming continued. It wasn't to be ignored. Night after night, Allison would wake up, already dreading what she would hear. It didn't make it any better that Mike started to give her concerned looks over his daily bowl of cereal, or that she was absolutely sleep-deprived because she didn't want to sleep anymore. No matter when she would go to bed, the screaming would wake her. By the end of the year, she was a wreck, so much that Mike went up to see his family on New Year's Eve by himself. She couldn't face Uncle Bernie trying to sneak a peek at her underwear whenever she ducked, or Cousin Lauren's disapproving look whenever Allison started to talk about being self-employed and a writer. She just waited for the "when will you get a proper job" question. No, she couldn't face it in this state. She couldn't even face herself. Mike was worried. He wanted to stay with her, be there for her, but she couldn't face that either. This would have been the final drop, the last bit of evidence proving that she was a macho. She wanted him to have a normal evening, an evening without her avoiding going to bed or hoovering the living room again at 2 a.m. at night. And so he left. Unwillingly dragged out by Uncle Bernie, but he left. And now Alison was alone. She didn't quite know if she liked this better. If she wanted to be alone with her insanity, without anyone to drag her out of that abyss. The only thing she knew was that it was going to be a long night. Seconds dragged past seconds until they became a minute. It probably didn't help that she was staring at a clock. Finally, it was only a few minutes to go to the new year. New year, new self, wasn't it? She really hoped so. And then the screaming began again. Alison nearly fell out of the armchair that she had made her castle that night. It had never happened before while she was still awake. It always took her out of her dreams, never out of her life. A new urgency was behind it. It was outside, she was sure of it. New year, new self? Fuck that, she thought. She was tired, had barely touched any of the food the last few days, and didn't even spend New Year's Eve with her boyfriend because she kept hearing odd noises every night. It was time to do something about it. Oh dear, new self. Why not? She almost ran into the kitchen and tried every single drawer for the wind-up torch. When she eventually found it, she wound it up bit by bit, and emotion gave her confidence. She would go out there now before all the lunatics would unleash the fireworks. She would go out there and prove to herself that there was nothing there. Then it would stop. It had to. This year had been very stressful. She had her first publication, she had quit her full-time job, and left for unknown waters. She was bound to become a bit stressed. She went into the hallway and grabbed her coat, realizing that it probably wouldn't fit over her dressing gown. It had been her home for the last few days, and frankly, it was a bit smelly. Better get out of the damn thing. It was as if taking off the dressing gown made her feel more like herself, as if putting on her coat was an act of liberation. And so she went out. The crying continued, and despite all that liberation, confidence, and knot formed in her stomach, she couldn't wait to get rid of it. There was nothing in the front garden. She slowly walked out of the back and cursed herself for not having installed a light for the back garden. The townhouse did have all the mod cons, so she hoped it would be a bloody light in the garden, so whenever the necessity arose to track down an odd noise possibly belonging to a ghostly baby or someone who broke into their currently non-existent shed, she could actually bloody see something. Despite the torch, she couldn't see where she was going. Every step, another one into uncertainty. She would have been screwed if she wasn't used to walking out here at night, having forgotten to get the washing in. She got more and more confident, deciding to abandon her quest and get an appointment to get something for the stress, until the screaming got louder. It sounded almost as if it was right in front of her. She took another step and her foot hit something. Something not quite solid, not quite soft, something alive. She took a step back, not able to breathe. The bloody torch ran out of energy, and the seconds to charge it back up seemed to take forever. She pointed the torch in front of her, only to see a fox looking right at her. Intelligent eyes were reading hers, looking at her with hunger. She took a step back, very slowly. After all, it was only a fox, smaller than her, and it couldn't really break into the house. It had a step back and another. And then the fox started to speak. So he finally came and found me. I'm glad. You made this rather awkward for me, you know, cutting it quite short with the timing. This isn't happening, Alison said and fell over the recycling bin behind her. Oh yes, it is indeed, the fox said. Finally I will be released. There's a price, of course, but it is yours to pay. A small tongue came out of its mouth, licking frantically. How long I've waited, nearly a whole year. Alison grabbed the bin behind her. It seemed that she was more in need of psychological treatment than she had thought. I wouldn't do that if I were you, the fox said, its eye flying to the bin. You followed my call. No weapon in the world can help you now. Its eyes lit up a pale blue. Alison felt as if her innards were torn to the outside and outside back into her inner body. Her eyes were blind and her ears couldn't hear. She couldn't feel, couldn't breathe. She should have been dead, but she wasn't. She was alive. Breathing came back to her, and so did her sight, just better. Her smell was so acute that she could smell every single thing in the bin. The feeling came back into her four feet as if, wait. She looked up into her own face, looking at her triumphantly. This is yours now, all yours, your burden to carry, your duty to make someone else pay the price for you. Fireworks were erupting all over the place, and Allison got scared. Her hearing was so sensitive to all the ruckus, it pained her, and she couldn't even put her hands over her head. You've got until the turn of this year to find your prey, or you will stay like this forever. Happy New Year to you. Her body turned away from her, opening the door, closing it, locking her out. She's realized that she couldn't open the door, not in this state. She didn't understand. More fireworks went off just behind her, and she ran as her reflexes and instinct told her to into the illuminated light. Mike decided to come home early. Allison did have a rough time, and he didn't want to leave her in the first place. When he opened the door, he found her sitting on the sofa, flicking through the channels. He walked over her and kissed her. Happy New Year. Happy New Year, she replied with a smile. You look a lot better, he embraced her. Even though they had only been separated for a few hours, he had missed her. I've never been better, she replied, and placed her face at his collarbone. Mike pulled her closer, glad whatever had befallen her was gone now. He never saw the pale blue light in her eyes. Okay, this one is called Taxi Driver. For lack of a better title. Bristol Airport, you say? Well, that's gonna take a while. The whole center is blocked off, as you can see, and I need to get around that somehow. Apparently the rest of the route is blocked as well. Seems someone just decided to overturn their car. Bloody idiots. I'll be planning plenty of time before I applied. Well, that's good. This will take a while. Might as well get comfortable. Oh, you want me to tell you a story? To pass the time? No one ever really asked me to tell them a story before. You're a journalist, so you want to see if you can transform the shit I tell you into gold. I see. Well, it's going to cost you a lot getting to the airport in this traffic, so I might as well throw a story in. I often get asked what it's like to be a taxi driver. It's not because people would be genuinely interested. It's only because they are polite. Because I'm polite too, I just give them a short reply. Something like, it's different every day. Nothing more is expected or wanted. But now that you're asking, I will tell you. It really is different every single day. I'm friend, confessor, psychologist and doctor all at the same time. No one would believe the things that people tell me every day. Things they would never tell their family or their closest friends. But they can tell me, because I'm only a taxi driver. Our lives will never cross paths again, and if they would, they can just ignore me. Or in case I want to talk, get a restraining order against me. I would never betray the secrets of anyone while I'm at work. Like priests and doctors, I feel that what I'm told is confidential. I'm not even telling my wife. I know. You're thinking, well, this is really boring. But let me tell you what, I find that the people that don't talk when I'm driving are the most interesting. What else is self-absorbed? What is it they don't even want to share with a taxi driver? So I watch them. At every traffic light. Sometimes I even glimpse back when I'm driving. It's bad, I know. You know, might call me a freak or stalker. But I'm just interested. Humans interest me. The way their lives intertwine. The way they are so very blind towards everything that's bloody obvious. Oh, please don't look at me that way. I know I shouldn't have sworn. I'm sorry. Oh. I talk about humans if I wasn't one myself. I'm sorry, bad habit. I've lived beneath them for hundreds of years, so I figure you could say I was as human as any of them, really. Now don't look so shocked. You're rude interrupting my story. That's what graft is about, isn't it? Now, the ones that never talk, they might tell me where they want to go. Sometimes they don't even do that. So just drive around until they look as if they want to leave the car. Easiest money ever earned, I tell you. Easy money, but not interesting at all to you. I see. Let me tell you a story about a young man then. He was full of ideas, full of life and love. He got a job that made him happy, married the woman of his dreams, and they went on to have healthy children. A lucky young man, wouldn't you say? He got everything he ever wanted, that lucky bastard. But you know how it is. If things go well, people start to get a taste for it. Enough is never quite what it seems to be, and he saw things that he liked. Things that he didn't have. So he wanted them for himself. He started staying at the office longer, hour after hour chained to the desk. The job he once loved and embraced started to feel like the smoke of a cigarette. A faint shadow of excitement was still there, but so was the bitter aftertaste and the smell that would never really leave the room. The feeling didn't leave him either. He took it with him, home to his wife, to his growing children. He couldn't give them the love or the care they deserved. Every night their eyes would show him that he had disappointed them again, and that their love and patience were worth dying every little bit a day. A little bit every day. He stayed even longer at the office. You know what happens to people like that? They die. Yes, I know, you all die. But at least most accomplish something or try to do so. At least you love, at least you feel the pain of life. What if the destination is shit? You might as well enjoy the ride, don't you think? You might as well love and laugh, cry and hate. Those people, though, they just die alone after a life full of loneliness. Oh, you wondered what happened to that young man? Of course, there was no happy end. There never is. Unless someone brings them back, someone tells them what they're doing to themselves and the people they once loved. Sounds like yourself? What a coincidence. I wouldn't have noticed. You know how it is. One human life is like another, easily confused. But let's be serious now. I know you find my story really interesting and all that, and it is. But don't you think that instead of running after the next story, you should maybe spend some more time with your wife and kids? She thinks of divorcing you. The kids know your best friend better than you, and so does your wife, by the way. I'd be careful. If there's one thing I learned, then it's that there is no adventure that can ever be as interesting as the one on your doorstep. I think this is your stop.
And that's our stop. Well, at least it's our stop for the moment. We'll now take about 5-10 minutes to replenish our drinks, order food, and then we'll be back with Lou Morgan.
Bristol Con Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the Bristol Con Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.